lovingly tell them that, and if they don't want to do it, I still will love them, but I'm not going to take, you know, I'm not going to take their calls once a week to hear excuses. It's just, life is too, you know, it's just a finite amount of time for us, and I just don't want to do that. And I find that I have really willing sponsees. You know, I sponsor, speaking of that, I sponsor a man. You know, he started out 400 pounds. He calls every day. And so the gender thing, I don't know. I don't know. It works out fine for us. So, but it takes a willingness to be in this program and to heal. But it's easier than being in the food.
I can make you a salad, but I can't make you abstinent or save you. So as a sponsor, I don't try to save anyone. I try to share what the way I am sponsored and the way my sponsor is sponsored and the things that I've learned. If you begin your sentences talking to me with "yeah, but," it's almost a done deal at that, because you're not listening. Or when I hear things like, I know. No, you don't, and you're not listening. I've had instances where I had to say, your job is to sit down and shut up, because we already know how to eat and you got nothing else to teach me right now. And that's harsh. That sounds really harsh. And I don't have to do that very often, but when it needs to be done, it needs to be done. My sponsor, we can talk and you know, share during our time, but there are those crucial times when she asks the questions and I can't, and the answer can't be yeah, but. You know, yeah, but is Lonnie at 340 pounds? No, we can't have that anymore. And so, and maybe it's over the years, I don't know. Excuses are not good. There are reasons. I can't dance tonight because I broke my leg today. That's a good reason, you know. But something else becomes an excuse, and it means eventually the food is going to take over. I can't stop someone. I can't stop this disease. I am not that kind of powerful person. I can point, help, guide, direct. I can do what was done to me. I don't want to tell you, my sponsor, I don't want to tell you what I eat. Oh, my goodness. Oh, hell no, I'm not going to tell you what I eat. And so she took me to someone else, and she said, would you tell this person? And I went, oh, yeah, I'll tell this person. This is okay. She did a great job. She guided me and took me one step farther. And that's kind of how my recovery has worked. But I start out right away with a sponsee with the understanding that at the end of the day, my job and my service to you is to remain abstinent, put my head on the pillow that night, and know that all is good in God's world, and we get up and we get to do it again tomorrow. And I'm hoping that I do something to help you, if it's take you to a workshop or just show you the extra help that you need. Thank you.
I just want to add that it's not a friendship. And I think that's really important, because being a manipulative type, I like to win friends and influence people and kind of, you know, get all in there. And I've been blessed with sponsors who were kind and gentle, but they felt that their job was to impart to me a certain set of principles and some directions in a way of living that was different than how I came here. And I'm really glad that we didn't hang out a lot and we weren't great friends, that we had those kind of boundaries, and it just helped me flower.
Again, Michael B. talks about sharing with another human being the exact nature of his food. And it reminds me of a place that I think is really important in the literature, but it's in the third edition, page 482, and it's about honesty. It's in the story, Belle of the Bar. And it goes, I know the biggest word for me in AA is honesty. I don't believe this program would work for me if I didn't get honest with myself about everything. Honesty is the easiest word for me to understand, because it is the exact opposite of what I've been doing all my life. Therefore, it will be the hardest to work on, but I will never be totally honest. That would make me perfect, and none of us can claim to be perfect. Only God is. If I work on it every day, it will be easier to be honest with myself. Then getting and staying honest with other people will come automatically. So it baby steps, step at a time, you know, like that. That's a piece of input that was valuable to me. Any other answer? We got.
Can I just ask a question?
Yeah.
Of the panel, Who here thinks they're opinionated old timer? Who relishes that term and who doesn't?
How many
opinionated old timer? Okay. Just, I've heard your opinions, Lonnie. I know you're.
Here's one. How do you keep a program fresh and alive?
Yeah. I look at my before pictures.
Yeah. And so do I look at her before pictures. It's not. It was, no.
Anyone else?
You sure, Judy? Okay. I remember I've been living up north for about 24 years, actually, but I grew up here in Los Angeles, and I remember Roseanne from my first week or two in the program, finding out who she is and seeing her over the years. And I lament with all of us on her passing. And I remember lovely Rose. She came here very overweight after many years of abstinence. And she was a way shower for me many years ago to put into practice today, to come down here, having put on about 50 pounds in 10 years in abstinence, to come here tonight, to be asked to be on the panel. We don't know what we do for each other. We have no idea how we impact each other. The love that's generated here is so powerful. I'm so grateful to be here tonight. Thank you, Roseanne.
You said how do you keep the program fresh and what? Okay. Fresh and, well, first of all, life happens. Life continues to happen. My life, like everyone else's, has gotten big, work, marriage, everything. So even when you put the food down, it's not a function of me keeping it fresh. God does it for me. Stuff happens all the time that I have to learn how to deal with. The other thing that, I'm the opinionated old-timer, and I just want to say, I don't think of this as my entertainment. I don't need for it to be fresh and alive. I think of myself having a terminal disease, and if I were to have a terminal disease, I would do anything, no matter how boring and god-awful repetitive, to continue living. And that's what I need to do with OA. Beyond a shadow of a doubt, I'd blow my fucking brains out if I were binging again. So I really don't look for entertainment. I don't go out with people. This is very serious business for me. And I do, as far as contribution is concerned, I haven't been of service. I've never been of service. But when they ask me to do something, I take it extremely seriously. My life depends on this. So I will do anything that I can to keep it alive for others. But I myself don't need for it to be fresh for me.
There's three ways that I've kept my program fresh and alive. One is I have dinner, or I want to eat. You know, food still calls my name, so it's keeps me that fresh and alive. One is I try to go deeper spiritually, because it's a bottomless well for how deep I can go spiritually. So how do I stay keep it fresh and alive? It's like that means I know all about God there is. There's still the spiritualness that I can still grow. And three is, I joined the LA Intergroup Board. And being of service, oh my God, exploded my program into so many different realms just by showing, by being on the LA Intergroup Board. It made me look at OA in a whole different way. So if you're bored with your program, join the board.
I just wanted to kind of mimic, ditto what Seppi just said. What does that mean, keep it fresh and alive? Life is fresh and alive every fucking day. I am reminded every day when I go to work, or I'm dealing with my husband, or I'm dealing with my family. Oy, dysfunctional, here we go. But I react and I respond in a different way now, after one day at a time working the 12 steps of the program, not running away from my life because I can't handle what's going on. So for me, you know, like you said, I don't have to be entertained with fresh and alive. Fresh and alive is when I wake up in the morning and I pray for the willingness for spiritual, emotional, and physical abstinence, and I go out and I live my life. I feel my life, I experience my life, and I love it. I don't always like what's going on, but it's fresh and alive because I show up and I walk the walk and I talk the talk one day at a time, sometimes one second at a time, and that's kind of fresh and alive enough for me.
I want to add something, sort of how I see the question and what sort of worked in my program and why I think I'm still here, is that sometimes things change. As a compulsive leader, I never want my life to change. I don't want my program. It's worked. These meetings are working. This service I'm doing is working. This sponsor, everything, I don't want it to change. But life does change. My food, as I get older, I have to eat less. I have to exercise more. All of a sudden, life changes. The meeting I always went to discontinues, and a new meeting starts, or all of a sudden I'm asked to do other service. And the longer I'm in, I'm seeing it's okay to want to keep everything the same, but when the opportunities to just go with it, this has got to change. You've got to do something different. Somebody asked me to sponsor somebody I wouldn't normally have done, as, okay, I'm going to learn from this, or I was asked a few years ago to lead a retreat, and that was something that scared me. So I did it, and it really broadened my program. So I keep looking to, as life changes, to just incorporate those into my program. And that's what I think the essence of life is about, to just keep enriching ourselves. Before, I would have just been enriching myself with food and not ever growing. And now I'm growing with life, so I don't have to go to the food.
Actually, I can kind of relate to that question. In fact, just this last week, I thought, oh, God, my Wednesday meeting again. You know, and we must all go through that from time to time. And I showed up. And it was like one of the best Wednesday meetings I've, you know, ever been to. It's people, it's the love that Spencer said. And bottom line, I just have to keep showing up and keep coming back. Because there are dry times, or sometimes it helps to mix up the meeting. Maybe I do need to go to a new meeting. You know, maybe take on a sponsee. That'll keep it fresh and alive. Thanks.
Terrell, may I break my anonymity? No, remember it was about a year ago now or whatever, I was sitting in the same seat every Saturday morning and sometimes listening, but the vast majority of the time not listening. And Terrell decided in his infinite wisdom to suggest I move my seat for just 1 month. And he said, just get the hell out of it. I think he just wanted me away from him. And so I moved to the other part of the room. And for the next, what's been now a year, but first about 8 or 9 weeks of that 4 weeks, I'd go up to him after each time and I said, that was the best speaker I've ever heard. He said, you heard the same goddamn speaker 6 months ago. I swear to God, he talked about a new pair of glasses, just the angle of sitting in a different seat and listening, granted, but just being more open, had the same speakers probably saying the same stuff, sounding different. So I didn't do that to keep the program alive, but it sure seemed like it enlivened my experience of the things I had already read and heard.
He was actually talking during the meeting, every meeting talking. And I think that's very rude. So as a sponsor, I had the right to tell him, do you change your seat? Quit interrupting the meeting, because people turn around and look at you when you're in the meeting.
But Terrell,
okay, we have a question back here.
But...
Turn off your mic.
Yes, Terrell.
Thanks for making me laugh because I was nervous about getting up here. I wanted to know if any of you have children who were born and raised during your abstinence and how it's affected your relationship.
Yeah. I think I'm the only one that had kids in program, and my wife's a member of this program too. I have twins that are 16 years old, and so I was already in program a long time when we had kids. And now I forgot at the beginning of the question, but it was very hard program-wise because all of a sudden I was used to going to meetings every night if I wanted. You know, I went to a lot of meetings, and if I wanted to go to conventions and retreats, and I gave a lot of service in OA before kids. And in the morning, you know, meditating, it was quiet. I could meditate whenever I wanted. And all of a sudden you have little little kids running around. And food, too, was all of a sudden different food in the house, you know. And it taught me to be flexible. It taught me that sometimes, and I think it changed my program, you know, that I had to do more with less, because sometimes I had to be there. My program was still important. I couldn't use that as an excuse to stop going to meetings, but I couldn't go to as many meetings. So some nights were for me, some nights were for my wife, some nights it was for the family, and that balance is important. If I'm here tonight, you know, I'm not with my kids, but we were on vacation, and for 3 weeks I was there for my kids. Meditating, you know, it was for several years, like I said, that I didn't have quiet mornings, so I had to figure other times. And my sponsor said, if you miss your morning meditation, then do it at night. You know, you don't have to be perfect. It works better in the morning, but with kids, I learned that flexibility. It was really hard on vacation. It was the same thing again. All of a sudden, they weren't out, you know, I'm going out at my sister-in-law's on her patio to meditate, and my kids are coming out because they want to sit with me. And I thought, you know, it's a blessing that they want to sit with me. And now I'm to the point, especially my son has special needs, and I say, you know, Jacob, why don't you sit and meditate with me? And it's good. But it's really changed my program and been an experience. And just because I'm in program doesn't mean that sometimes I don't want to, I thought I would never do what my parents did. And sometimes it's still, oh, eat this, you know, especially when they were little, to not even recognize that I'm still a compulsive overeater and I'm not eating something, but I want my kids to have it so they're happy. Or, oh, if you're good, I'll take you out to a restaurant. I did it. I still sometimes do it. I'm not perfect. I'm still a compulsive overeater. I'm aware of it, and hopefully I do it less than my parents did it to me.
Here's one. Could each or any of you say what your favorite piece of literature is?
I like the AA 12 and 12. And what I did when I was new, because there was no OA literature, I took a red pen and I crossed out alcohol and put food, and I crossed out glass and put plate. So plate in hand instead of food, you know, and that whole thing. And this was my favorite piece of literature, is AA 12 and 12.
Thank you. My favorite piece of literature is really just a sentence out of the AA literature, and it's Rule 62. Don't take yourself too damn seriously.
That's what he meant.
Here's a little bit of history. All our pamphlets, the OA pamphlets, which I've always loved, there was one great one called If God Spoke to OA. And that talks, I think we might still have it, but I think it's changed, actually. But it talks about how each of us is uniquely qualified because of our depth with the food, because we're overeaters, to help the next person. I always loved that. And I've applied it to other areas of my life. But across the top of each of the pamphlets back in the olden days, when meetings were 2 hours long And the speaker,
uphill in the snow.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And the speakers would always talk for 45 minutes. And plus, we would then go out to coffee afterward. Okay, so across the top of each of our pamphlets, it said, call before you take that first bite. And that is it for me. Abstinence is the most important thing in my life, without exception. I think that's partly how I've stayed abstinent all this time. And for 5 years, I could not call before taking that first bite. I always called afterward. But it's just so important. And I'll just put in a word for, you know, truly, we each have our own opinions here. And I'm not afraid of having it anymore because it's not personal. It's strictly about principles. But I think it would be very damaging to OA to remove the word abstinence from the. I mean, in AA, they don't drink. It would be like removing sobriety. And anyway, so that's my opinion. And it, you know, we can love each other, and I can be voted down, as I have many times in meetings, on my opinions about how things should go. But there it's said. But I used to love that because that was so important, and I miss hearing that more.
Okay. How about how do you remember the low, the terror, how bad it was when you came in?
You tell your story over and over at meetings.
That never goes away. I am an older human being now. I have a very lousy memory for 5 seconds ago, but I will never, never forget what it was like when I was binging my brains out and running away and using the food. So with that, as a compulsive overeater, I don't ever want to forget, and I know I never, ever will.
And the kicker for me, which made no sense when I got here, is when I read the promises. And one of them was, we will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door. And I thought when I came in here, I wanted to forget that stuff. And now, a long time later, I never want to forget it. I never want to forget where I came from, or like they say about history, very apt to play it back. I've seen people in this program leave and come back 300 pounds heavier. And every now and again, you'll hear somebody in a meeting say, my top weight so far. And I like that. The same thing with the argument about recovered or recovering. There's a lot of people want to argue one way or the other. In the AA literature, in my experience, goes both ways. It says both. I still use the word recovering. I know there's a small group of people who love using the word recovered. God bless them. My experience is, one day at a time, I am recovering. I don't find that a bad label. I don't find that debilitating or painful or challenging or depressing at all. My wife doesn't have a thyroid, so she takes her medicine, and because of that, she can function fine. I have this disease, and if I take my medicine, I can function fine also. Mm-hmm. So I don't find the notion of recovering to be problematic or stigmatizing or anything. Just me. Okay. Can you describe in detail your personal abstinence? Anybody want to?
Okay. I eat anything. I have to admit it. I eat anything. I have no restrictions, although I don't eat dairy, stuff like that, because it is a lot of mucus. But there is no food group that I do not eat. I eat it in moderation, and this is, again, me. I'm only talking about me. Because, as we've all been saying, one day at a time, my recovery, my abstinence is spiritual, emotional, and physical. I used to binge on lettuce. I used to eat 40 ounces of cottage cheese. It wasn't just one particular food, you know, sugar. It wasn't carbs. It was anything and everything. So, I forgot the question.
The beauties to getting older.
Oh, my personal, see, I told you I have no memory. I can remember, you know, the past, but my personal abstinence is 3 meals a day, sometimes a snack in between, and no compulsive overeating, one day at a time, 1 second at a time. And I'm very, very grateful for that gift from my higher power.
Thank you. I abstain from compulsive overeating. I eat all living creatures I do believe eat, but I do not compulsively overeat. It means that my meals, for the most part, not at all perfect, look moderate. In case I forget what that looks like, every now and then I eat with my sponsor. She serves the plate, and I go, yeah, that's what that moderate thing looks like, all right. Cause she is not to be, you know, not to be crossed. And today, and I have, for quite a while now, I email my food to her daily, honestly, and should I change something at dinner? Because sometimes something will just change. Not doesn't go anywhere, it just changes. And I will also get that information to her. Not that she's waiting to receive it, but I need to keep it honest and keep it real because I'm a food liar. Okay, I didn't come here because I was honest and good. So I have a food plan that has changed over the years. You know, it started out 5 meals a week, at least at Popeye's Fried Chicken, abstinently, I got to say. But that is not what it is today. So I have a food plan. But my abstinence is what I don't do. Sugar, forget it. That's poison for me. If I ever get tempted, or at least so far up until today, if I get tempted or I'm in a hard place with that, my visual is you've just sprayed it with Raid. You have saturated it in bug bomb. Believe me, at that point, I don't want it because that's the exact effect it has on me. And I just need to remember that. So I do not compulsively overeat. I have moderate meals, and today I have to have a snack. A snack is very small. The size of it does not change, and it really is for medicinal purposes to keep the blood sugar up because I have very low blood sugar. I'm hypoglycemic. I guess that's about it.
Thank you all. Thank you to the panel. Can you tell me just one great thing that's in your life because of, you know, within abstinence or being abstinent or, and something that maybe not necessarily beyond your wildest dreams, but something that probably is unexpected that's great?
I'd like to, real quick, I came to a program in 82 and they told me to it was from the podium to talk about everything and anything that was bothering me. And when I came here, I had two things that I talked about every time I shared, which was the disdain for my body, even after I had lost my weight, because of stretch marks and loose skin, and my disdain for my career, which was floundering is being kind. And I had miracles happen in both contexts by being out. It's like what Michael L. used to say, what do I want to talk about? And I didn't want to talk about those because I had a lot of shame about them both. And because of fellows, one person took me to the beach and protected me from the boogeyman when I took off my shirt for the first time in 20 years. And two women came up to me and approached me about volunteering in a particular field that never would have occurred to me. And now it's 32 years later, and I've been educated and with a career of 32 years in that new field. So I got a career, and I've got at least some 449 acceptance of my body, which is just 32 years older. And I don't have less stretch marks, certainly, and it's not tighter skin in 32 years. So it changes my attitude, not the concrete things. So those are the two things that the program has given me.
Okay. I'm sorry. I want to say two things. First one is my husband. He's here.
Is there something you'd like to talk about, Christian?
There. And I'll tell you exactly how the program made that happen. First of all, I am a very different person. If he and I had met 27 years ago, I would have probably bitten his head off because you wouldn't know. But that's because how much I was angry with myself, how much I did not like myself. So the evolution to someone who's civil, who's accountable, who acts my age, that's a direct result of working the steps. Then how I got to meet him, how I dated him, everything about it was through following the steps of the program, talking to someone who'd gone before, sharing my fears, doing it anyway, calling and saying, what do I say now? Using the tools of the program. And it is, there is no man in my family, no role model who was I can say, oh, this is like him. Nothing. I mean, it's just total gift from God. And also my career. I have a wonderful job that in reality, I didn't even know this kind of thing existed this easily. And again, it was strictly a function of following what my sponsor told me, sending out a resume when I thought it's not perfect, having her tell me, aim for average, your cover letter doesn't have to be perfect. Everything, those are the two best things, but everything I have, everything, is a direct result, direct, not even indirect, result of this program. That's me.
I want to say, too, there's not one thing, but there is so many things in my life that the direct result of I would have had no life. You know, I have a career that I'm respected in, and I know I do a good job, and I could never do that without this program. Without this program, I'm afraid of people, and I deal with people all the time. We just got back a week ago from a 3-week vacation in Israel and Istanbul. And when I came to OA, I wanted a food plan that I could go anywhere in the world and be able to live. And I have a sponsor that says, you can go anywhere and you take your program. And so I took my program with me, and we had a fantastic time. And it was a wonderful experience with my wife and my children that we'll have forever. And if I was into the food, I'd never have a wife and children. But if I went back, if I chose the food instead of the trip and being with them, we just had this fantastic, not every minute was fantastic, but the experience was really fantastic. And I have family that I've stayed in contact with. When I was fat growing up, I didn't want to see family. And now I have cousins that look forward to every few years seeing me. And I went on this trip with another cousin who's by blood a lot closer to these relatives, and yet I'm the one in contact. And how is it me, the shy, the scared person of people? It's because of the transformation that this program and absence gave me.
I've become a kinder, gentler person. When I came here, my tombstone was going to read, "Nobody got the best of her." And that was my agenda. And today, I could care less. I laugh at myself, and I don't mind whoever laughs at me. And I do have a man who would choose that kind of lady. I never would have looked at him, and he never would have looked at me as the kind of person. Not because of the weight, but the kind of person, the energy that I was embodying all those years ago. I got so much encouragement in this program. You know, I never wanted to go for my PhD. I would sit in meetings week after week about this is castrating to men, I can't be other than, and they kept saying, be all you can be. I got my PhD, I wrote a best-selling book, I was on Oprah 3 times. Before the first time on Oprah, I was scared out of my mind, and they said, get down on your knees and pray, be a channel. And all of those lessons, go for it and let go. Go for it and let go. And I travel all over the world, and I have an ideal life, and the promises have come through for me, true for me. Situations that once baffled us will instinctively know how to handle. I can't tell you how many times that has happened for me. Like, where did that answer come from? And it was usually something I heard at a meeting that I said, oh, she's full of it. You know, I didn't want to listen, but it went in anyway. And then when I needed it, you were there.
Great questions tonight. And I'm just having such a good time. This is the funniest one I've ever heard, though. She's a food liar. I just love it. I just love it. I relate. But to answer your question, you hear at the program, it's either finances or romances is what's going on. And it's pretty much accurate. I had a sponsor, some of these old geezers will remember, Al Sines. And I've been dealing with depression for 40 years. It's just how it is. And all of it here in the program, I remember being in the nut house at the VA and for 9 weeks, every day, somebody in the program came and got me and took me to a meeting. Every day. Nothing like it. But I remember when I finally ran out of money and Al said, it's time to get some work. And I said, yeah, but I feel like shit. He says, well, get a shitty job. So I think some of you will remember I got a job at the post office. And back then, that qualified as a shitty job. Now you'd give a thumb to have a job at the post office, you know. But as a result of showing up a day at a time, you know, I now have a retirement from the post office. It allowed me to move to Santa Barbara. And in moving to Santa Barbara, I met the love of my life. And we've been married 24 years. 22 and known each other 23. And this week, I was given a gift of doing a fifth step with my wife. We're involved in a class, and what the class was is sharing at just a profound level that neither of us have ever done with each other. And sitting on that couch and looking at each other, I realized I shared the deepest things, the regrets and the applause in my soul. And she did the same. And I've never done anything like that with her in all the years we've been together. And that was just something else. And I'll just end with this. I have a friend who's 81 in the program. He's sober of many, many, many years. He said, Spencer, you sent chills down my spine when you told me that, because my first wife, had I done that with her, I wonder what our lives would have been like. She's now been remarried 4 times and died 2 years ago. I would have loved to have that experience. That's what I've gotten here in the 12 steps in the program of Overeaters Anonymous.
That I want to put in here. The greatest gift I've gotten from what I've got from this program is that it's I've gotten peace of mind. I was at Serenity Sunday, and the two women were pitching at a meeting. They both had just gotten married, and they're talking about the gifts of the program, getting married. I'm single. Does that mean I don't get the gifts? To me, it's like there's nothing material that is ever going to be a gift of the program. The gift of the program for me is I am comfortable in my own skin. And that is beyond my wildest dreams. Because when I walked in these doors, I never, ever thought I'd be comfortable in my own skin. That I could wake up in the morning cheerful. That I could smile. Because that was not me. And that, to me, is the greatest gift.
We have a question from here now.
Okay, two things. A similar piggybacking there is that this, I think it's safe to say, was my most challenging year in 32. And I won't go into details, but it was real stuff, real life and death stuff. And I feel great. I don't think I've ever felt better. I laugh more. I'm content. Happy. And the other thing is that the desire to overeat has been lifted right out of me. See, when I got here, I wanted to be thin. I wanted to stop overeating. I saw that that was possible. I think even though those were impossible for me, the one that was even more impossible was to lose the awful craving I had. I thought my craving to overeat was worse than anyone else here. That's why it took me 5 years, blah, 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 on and on. God plucked it right out of me just by going to me. I didn't push the table away. Just kept doing my due, kept doing it sloppily, imperfectly, and that's probably the hugest miracle, is the desire to overeat's been lifted.
I'd also like to speak on that. And piggyback, ditto. But one thing this last year especially that made me laugh when you asked the question. When I came here, okay, I was 5'6", I'm now 5'4", different issue. A 340-pound 5'6" woman is unlovely. My view of myself was pretty much what it took to draw my eyebrows in, because I need that. And this last year, a little bit more than a year maybe, but a new thing kind of emerged with me, kind of developed. I get dressed in the morning, I go through my morning routine, I've done my reading, I'm pretty much a happy girl. You know, the magical brain is quiet, I'm ready to start my day, and I'm joyful, and I look in the mirror, and it's a pretty good-sized mirror these days, but look in the mirror, and this is what comes out, and I speak it out loud. You know, girl, you looked really good yesterday, but damn, you look particularly good today. Truth. Is that the truth? Yes, that's the truth. I spent so many years in my life cursing myself, and I refuse to speak curses over myself anymore. If I'm going to speak something over myself, I'm going to speak a powerful blessing over myself. Now, my husband, who does not share the joy of our 12 steps, and pretty much he's standing over the heater about 12 feet away watching this show. This is now better than television as far as he is concerned, and he's laughing, and it's not necessarily complimentary. And I'm going to allow that to go by because I'm in a good space. But I kind of looked over and went, excuse me, I'm having a conversation with myself right here. I don't remember inviting you into this. But two or three days of this now, and he finally goes, because it doesn't change. And this morning when I got dressed, I hadn't seen myself full version to realize I'm wearing clothes that are way too big. That was earlier today. But I did the same thing. You know, girl, damn, you looked good yesterday, but you are particularly fine today. Same reaction. And I went, why not start my day like that? And that is a direct gift of working the 12 steps. Whether I like it or not, I show up or not, or my sponsor puts her ribs in my elbows and makes me do service things that I don't want to do, I'll take that gift today. Thank you.
Carol. Wasn't it Roseanne at a meeting once who said, now that she spent all those years getting to goal weight, 3 inches below goal height?
Right. editor's note or whatever programming note. This is scheduled to go to 9:30. We're actually at 9:45.
It won't be long until most of these people are going to fall asleep anyway, Terry.
So we've gone over that time zone. We're not really sure what the end time is. If y'all, so we're probably with another 15 minutes, I think, and 10 o'clock, and we'll call it quits. So if we know we're over, we apologize. If you got to go to the bathroom, we understand. And one or two more questions.
And if you have to go to the bathroom and you're on the panel, don't go on the panel.
Where'd Seppy go?
What, number one or number two? Hold on a second.
Yeah. Hi, and thank you all for doing service tonight. How have you seen the fellowship change over the years? You talked about people coming and taking to your meeting every day. Do you think that still happens as much now as it did then? What changes have you seen?
Oh, I want to start real quick. I mean, there were 126, seems to ring a bell, meetings in the LA directory in about 19, when was the peak? Early 80s. Last time I counted was about 65 now. So that's about a half. And that frightens the hell out of me. The only other thing that's changed a lot, especially for the people in the big city, is when I came in, they had just done some kind of survey, and it was 89% female, and I think that was done in, again, the early 80s. I don't know what it would be now, but certainly we're really fortunate. I've led retreats in Lumberton, Mississippi, and Beckwith, Georgia, and places where a man would either have to use an AA sponsor or a female sponsor, which is fine, but I mean, not in the conventional suggestions of the program, where people were driving an hour and a half to get to a meeting, or there'd be one or two meetings a week. So we're blessed here, but there's certainly a shitload less meetings than there used to be. And a lot of meetings have just gone by the wayside. that we used to have. That, you know, I think there's a proliferation also of other options for overeaters, and most of which, what was that line that we were supposed to use today? I once went to Weight Watchers, and in 2 weeks I lost 14 days. Right? Right? Not good. Okay. Thought that way. Right? Right?
Anyone else want to talk about how programs changed? I can give you a real quick anecdote. I got an email from this gal in India who heard me on a podcast and wanted to talk to me. Now, when I came in, that would have never happened. So there's
no India when you came in there.
So that's it. That's the upside and downside, right? I joke about you kids can text. You kids can text. It's a miracle. You can now commit your food with a text. Well, in the old days, we had to go like, oh, I guess I don't get to change my food, you know. But.
Yeah, there was a, only about 4 months ago, Serenity Sunday, a gal in there from Australia melted into tears because the only access to program she had was our magazine, Lifeline. And here she was. I mean, it was made everything worth it.
When somebody asked what fellowship, the fellowship, like I think people talked about, we did things different years ago. The meetings were 2 hours. There was a break. Breaks were scary. So it was a good thing. That was a good thing. People don't have to interact during a meeting. We went out after meetings for coffee. So in that way, the fellowship was different, and that was important. One of the reasons why I still kept coming back, because I didn't know how to be a friend or how to relate to people. So that was really good. On the other hand, just like Tara was saying, there are so many things we didn't have. And Jack, you know, there are less meetings, but there may be more meetings we don't know about. Younger, everybody look around here, it's an older group than it used to be. Nowadays, a lot of young people are doing telephone meetings, online meetings. There's so many other options, and I think we have to look at it. It isn't the way we thought meetings were. There were also other fellowships that were calling themselves OA, but they weren't really OA, and they were all listed together, and it was confusing. I don't find OA as confusing. We all think different. We have different opinions, but it's all OA. It's much more unified than it used to be. I used to feel different. But it's good and bad, like everything else.
A little bit.
Will the old timer please stop fetching?
Are you talking to me, Jack? I think a little bit in terms of the substance of what gets discussed in meetings, I've noticed, which it seems like there's a little bit more psychobabble of explaining why I ate. In my day, when I first came in, that was never a discussion. You ate because you're a compulsive overeater, and that's why we all ate. We weren't so interested in the why. We weren't so interested in what happened to you in your childhood. Not that any of that's wrong, but it's more about, you know, I get the shittiest childhood award. You can't have it. You know, it's like, forget how bad it was. What are we going to do today and tomorrow? It was all about here and now and into the future. And I think there's been a little shift toward too much psychobabble, in my opinion.
My inner child is very offended when you say that.
Where's my teddy bear? I need my teddy bear. Remember the teddy bear stage in the 80s? Oh, my God. They'll go on that shame spiral. Okay. What else? Anyone else? One last question, then that's it.
Last question?
Yes.
Okay.
Back here. Here, no, you got to be with you. We might be recording. You might got to be recording.
Hi. Thank you all for being here and being of service, and thank everybody else for being here. It's been really wonderful. I'm just wondering if any of you have ever dealt with the fear of losing weight, and if you have, what have you done about it?
You go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely afraid. And I was told that that was none of my business, that all I had to do was abstain. And I had to weigh myself, I do believe, when I was losing my weight once a month. So in that sense, it was my business. But it's kind of like, you know, life, I take the action, turn the result over to God. My weight wasn't good. That's the only way I could deal with it.
I also had some experiences with that. When I was, there was one phase there where I was moving into a smaller pant size, into size, anyway, I kept buying size 12 pants and having them taken in. And my sponsor said, why don't you try on a 10? And I started shaking. Because as I was growing up, a 12 was a normal person, but a 10 was a thin person. And two OA people went with me to the store for me to try on the 10s. And that's how terrifying it was, about being normal, about fitting in, about not having it as an issue. But it's been gradual. You know, it happens gradually, and you just keep hanging out with the people who will help you get there.
What I found was I started at 265 pounds, and as I worked the program, I was ready for each pound. I weighed every Friday morning. I was scared to death when people would compliment me, and I was taught to just say thank you, and that's what I did, not to explain it or do whatever I had to do. I was scared to death when men would look at me. I was single when I came in the program. And what happened was is I matured as my weight went down because I worked the program the whole time. So I matured every pant size or everything. The first time I tried on a size 14, I just cried in the dressing room. And the lady probably thought, the salesperson probably thought I was crying because I was a size 14. I had never been a size 14 probably since I was around 10 years old. And I cried and I just kept losing my weight and being scared and doing my writing and having people hold my hand in this program. And now I love being, I'm a size 6 jeans, and that's a blessing, and I wouldn't change that for the world. So I matured to that point where I could handle it. So as long as I work the program and not just diet, I'm fine.
Okay, so I'm still maturing, because this morning when I got dressed, and I had on different upper clothes this morning, I thought I was fine, you know, did my thing, came in, and I was in the bathroom talking with somebody, and there's a full-length mirror in there, and I turned around and went, oh, my God, my clothes are too big. I need new clothes. And literally, the sweater and the long sweater and blouse I was wearing were way too big. They were comfortable. They were mine. I've owned them a long time. I really like them. I'm loath to want to give them up. They're too big. So I came out and I ran into someone whom I really respect in this program. And of course, we greeted and hugged. And she said, how are you doing? And I said, my clothes are too big. And she said, yes, they are. And there's validation right there. And so she said, let me suggest something to you. And I was open and I said, please. First, wear some clothes that fit. I actually have some that wear some clothes that fit. But if you're really uncomfortable having something fit that close to you, just maybe go to a meeting, switch tops, put on the one that fits, and then you can always swap before. In other words, test it with baby steps and treat it like a Halloween costume. This is brilliant. This is brilliant. And I said, oh, my God, this is brilliant. I can do everything and I don't have to wear the big red nose. But I could treat it like a Halloween costume. It has given me, she said, do you want to call me? And, oh, you mean you really want me to take action on it now? Okay, so yes, I think you're brilliant. And yes, I'm willing to call you because she's helped me with other things before. But there it was an epiphany that I had not had until this morning, right there on the spot. You know, a blessing and a gift of the program, and there's my direction, and one more time, an opportunity. Thank you.
All set? Okay, let's thank all the people who have been on.